Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Sherlock Highlights podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined remotely, of course, by Heather Steele, Becky Hull, and author Gemma Wayne. Gemma is the author of three novels, After Before, Chains of Sand, and her latest novel, which came out just last week, To Dare. She's also been longlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction and shortlisted for both the Guardian's Not the Booker Prize and the Waverton Good Read Award. Gemma is also a journalist whose work has appeared in The Spectator, National Geographic, Huffington Post, Evening Standard, to name a few. So welcome, Gemma. Emma.
Thank you so much for having me.
So lovely to have you today. How is everybody? We are week 16 of lockdown. How's everybody getting on? Gemma, how's your lockdown been?
It's been pretty good, actually. Ups and downs. Gets a bit frustrating at times, a little bit Groundhog Day, but actually it's been quite nice just slowing down a bit and spending more time with the kids, and the weather's been great until now, so that's been the case.
And the book was supposed to come out earlier, is that right? But it was delayed because of Corona?
Yes, it was meant to come out in June and then we pushed it to July. And I mean, although people have been reading a lot more, actually, which has been great, I think just we've all been just wanting to talk about Corona. So it made sense to hold off a little bit till we're ready for other things.
It did. All right. Well, we will talk plenty about both summer reads and your book later in the podcast. But first of all, what has everybody been watching, listening to? Heather, I'll come to you first.
So obviously listened to last week's podcast, which I wasn't in, and I know you guys were talking about Athlete A, which I also watched when it came out and thought, yeah, that is horrible, but also uplifting at the end, as you and Lou said. But on a similar vein, something has recently come onto Netflix and on the iPlayer as well. It's called Roll Red Roll, and it's quite a similar thing. It's a one-off documentary about a rape that occurred in 2012 in a town in Ohio, and it was multiple members of the sort of high school American football team who were all involved in this horrible incident. And again, similar to Athlete A and other, like, you know, the Jeffrey Epstein documentary that was also on Netflix, it's just sort of covering a very horrible subject matter, but you come away feeling kind of hopeful and illuminated that justice will be served. And it's just a real eye-opener, and again, it just highlights all these systemic things that just allow these things to keep happening. And it sort of centres on the powerful women who are trying to overturn the system. But it's, again, I think it's about an hour and 20 minutes, and it's definitely worth a watch if you want.
It's so hard to know how to, like, I'd love to understand the psychology behind why we are interested in watching those shows. Like, obviously it is informative and it's good to be to kind of educate yourself about these topics, but there's something really weird about kind of going and being like, right, so I need an hour's entertainment, so I'm going to sit down and watch a documentary about rape, isn't it?
I don't know, for me I just feel like I should be watching them initially because there's a sort of educational aspect to it, or you want to see justice served, I suppose. But the reason this was actually made into a documentary 2 years ago is because this had all happened in 2012, and again the police and everyone, the people in power, the coaches on the football team, were sort of covering it up, and the victim was kind of made out to be like, oh, well, she was drinking with boys, so what did she expect, kind of narrative. But the reason it actually got sort of worldwide attention is because the, you know, Anonymous, that sort of online vigilante group, they got involved, and I don't know how, because it wasn't explained, but everyone thought the boys were innocent, and then somehow Anonymous got hold of video footage of the night with these four boys talking for 12 minutes about what they'd done. So they posted that online, and then it basically had this sort of huge worldwide sort of story back in 2012, and there were loads of protests, and it made lots of other people come out and speak out about what had happened to them. So it's definitely very powerful to watch all that and see how it all unfolds over time. But yeah, I agree. It's not exactly, you know, a Friday night. Oh, what should we watch tonight? But I think it's definitely worth a watch.
Cool. It sounds really good. Thank you. Becky, what about you?
Charlotte, I don't know if you're the same, but I have just started The Politician too. Have you
finished it?
I feel like it's not going to be as good as series one.
Oh, Becky, it's better. It's so good. Yeah, it's so good.
I'm on that. And I mean, I love the characters. I love, obviously, Gwyneth Paltrow. I think I said this to you the other day. I mean, I've only just come across The Politician in lockdown, so I'm not really sure how it took me so long. But I just thought the series one was so brilliantly done that maybe I've watched them too close in succession. I'm not sure. But is Bette Midler in it?
Bette Midler's in it, and Bette Midler makes season two.
Bette Midler for me is what has made it so exciting, so funny and punchy. But yeah, that is what I am currently tuning into, slightly more lighthearted. And I have actually started Jeffrey Epstein, because again, I'm very late to the party with that, but it seems very timely given Ghislaine Maxwell has just been arrested.
I cannot believe it.
And I, do you know what, watching it now has made me even more satisfied personally that she has been arrested and found, and it just feels like a very timely time to watch it.
Gemma, have you seen either The Politician or the Jeffrey Epstein doc?
Actually, the Jeffrey Epstein doc, yes, I've started. I haven't actually finished it yet. I agree with what you were talking about before, with kind of exploring those heavy subjects and why we're kind of drawn to it. I often write about heavy subjects and people sometimes say, like, why? Why do you be in that world? But I think it's kind of like a way that it's like a society-wide therapy session. We get to kind of work through these issues and figure out how we feel about them and hopefully move to a better place with it. So I'm quite compelled by that one as well. But then my stuff, it's probably the stuff everyone's been watching. It's This Is Us and My Brilliant Friend, and I'm loving those.
My Brilliant Friend, I'm still yet to either watch or read. Which do you recommend more?
Oh, I mean, I don't think you can ever quite compare to the book, but the film is really also vivid and visceral. You just totally feel like you're in this world of where they're living in Italy and immersed in their lives. So I really think it's great.
Worth a watch. Yeah. Well, I do have a recommendation, which is the Hillary documentary on Sky, and is a delve into Hillary Clinton's life. I've watched the first two or four, and it's just fascinating. Like, it's a real study, I guess, into how circumstances take you in a different direction. Like, they kind of go a lot, obviously, into her childhood, into her education, into her kind of early years and the first few years of her marriage to Bill. And like, she's insane, like so brilliant, so impressive, and actually so much more so than him in that first kind of decade or so of their marriage. And it's just so interesting to wonder, like, what would have happened if she had had the political ambitions instead of him at that time. Like, would she have been where she is today? Obviously, it was a really different kind of climate for women. She was kind of graduating around 1968, so she was a real kind of, she went to Wellesley College and was like a bit of a bra burner. And like, if you're like me and you've kind of only known her as this kind of quite prim blonde first lady, seeing that kind of hippie real kind of lefty side to her is really interesting too. So I really recommend it. It's got a slightly, probably more than slightly, biased slant. I think it's actually produced by the Clintons, so you're not going to get a completely unbiased perspective. But whatever you think of her politically, you can't deny that she's pretty impressive and she's done some pretty amazing things and had an interesting life. So yeah, for that reason, I recommend.
On that note, Charlotte, there's a book coming out, I think, later this month called Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld. And yes, again, it's fiction, but it basically takes that time period and rewrites the story as if she does meet Bill, but if she'd never accepted his proposal, what could have happened?
Yeah.
So yeah,
I've heard about
this. Excited.
I think it's out in other countries.
It's out in the States, yeah.
Yeah, she's just cool. I'm a massive fan. I understand if you don't like her politics or you think she's a liar or whatever, but I think she's amazing.
But I think you're right, politics aside, you can tell that Hillary Clinton has had to put up with a lot of shit. So I think seeing how kind of steely she is with everything that has clearly gone on behind the scenes is fascinating in itself.
We are going to talk about career advice and life advice later in the podcast, but she is the ultimate inspirational story about kind of getting up and dusting yourself off and going again, isn't she?
Exactly.
And rising from the ashes. So yeah. Oh, Heather, I'm going to read that for Jim. Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it comes out here. It got pushed back a bit over here, but I think it's coming out later this month.
Let's talk about new books now. Timely with you here, Gemma. We were to feature on the 8 new books to read this July. Heather, did you put this together?
Yes.
tell us, what are your top recommended new reads this month?
So I've actually personally mainly been reading Call Me By Your Name because I'd never read it before, and obviously it came out a few years ago and I absolutely loved the film and I needed something sort of summary, and because it's set in Italy I was like, aha, the perfect time to read it. So that's what I have been reading this July rather than those. But I've also, I only started reading it last night. It's called Small Pleasures by Claire Chambers and it comes out a little bit later this month, and it's basically set in the 1950s in Southeast London, and I think it appeals to me a bit because it's about a journalist, so I always like reading about people who are write features, etc. But she's called Jean and she works on a local paper and she's almost 40 and she lives with her mother, so she's feeling a bit like meh, whatever. But then this young Swiss woman contacts the paper claiming that her daughter's the result of a virgin birth. And then it kind of leads Jean, apparently, I've not got this far yet, but to discover like whether this is a miracle or a fraud. And her life kind of gets intertwined with this girl's, and she gets to know like the husband and their daughter, and it just gets very dark.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the recommendations were quite dark.
Yeah, I feel like that's been a bit of a theme this year. I know Tor spoke about My Dark Vanessa on last week's podcast, but yeah, there's definitely seems to be, I suppose summer generally there tends to be lots of thrillers and things out, because generally that might be something you'd read on a beach if you were going abroad. But yeah, they quite a dark selection this month.
Gemma, something you know a little bit about.
Yeah, so actually I had a sneak peek at a book that isn't quite out. It's coming out in September. I got to read a proof copy and it's called The Bench by Saskia Sargentson. And it is just this beautiful love story. So not so dark. There's some grief in it. There's some ups and downs. It's a real roller coaster, but it's about this couple that meet pre-days of internets and mobile phones. It's kind of just before that period. They meet in a small town in America, and then fate intervenes and they're pulled apart, and then they're thrown back together and pulled apart, and you're kind of up and down and all over the place with them. But it's just so beautifully written. You're so invested in these characters. You just want them to be together. And it's a really, by the end, it's kind of this uplifting, wonderful, just portrait of love.
Oh,
I
sounds
love it.
Lovely.
That sounds lovely. Yeah.
Obviously, Tadere, which is your new novel, also has a kind of thriller element to it. Is that kind of what you enjoy reading in your spare time? Or like, what do you find you tend to read fiction-wise?
Not really thrillers, actually. And I wouldn't say this is totally a thriller. It's kind of somewhere between commercial literary fiction, but it's a step into that realm of psychological suspense. Mm-hmm. So no, I usually read probably exactly that area, kind of accessible literary fiction. I love kind of family dramas and big sweeping epics. I just read Hamnet. I'm reading Girl, Woman, Other at the moment. Yeah, that's my kind of bag.
So Gemma, the book is obviously out now. Can you tell us what it's about?
Sure. So the book is about power, family, inequality and revenge. So it's told by three very different female protagonists whose lives all interweave, the focal point being two of the women, Veronica and Simone, live next door to each other. And on the night that Veronica moves into her new home with her husband, through their shared wall, they hear what sounds like Simone being assaulted. But they're not sure. It could also be consensual rough sex. They don't know. So they're kind of faced with this moral dilemma of, do they have a duty to intervene? What if they do and they're wrong? How might that impact the woman and her family? What if they don't and they were right? Might this woman and children be in peril? And also, if they get involved, how will that, might that create hostility against themselves? Meanwhile, the third protagonist is Veronica's childhood friend, Sarah, who reappears in her life, and secrets from their past together start to spill into the present and then tightens the tension for everyone involved.
Well, what a lovely synopsis. It does, isn't it? And where does one even begin? Just like, how do you start? Do you decide you want to write a book first, or do you have an idea first? Which way round does it come?
So there were a couple of plot points that were inspired by real life experience for me. So this neighbour situation that I was talking about in the book, it's far, far more extreme and awful and spirals out of control in a totally fictional way. But that original premise of hearing worrying noises through walls, that is something that actually happened to my husband and I, and was a very tense time. Kept a journal at the time, and was something I knew I always wanted to try to write about at some point. So things like that have definitely been triggers. But generally, as a writer, I usually start with the themes of the book, because I just kind of want to know what's going to sustain my characters, and also what am I going to be thinking about for 300 odd pages? It has to be something that I'm really engaged with. So for this one, I started thinking about the story around the time of Brexit, and then there came the Me Too movement. And so I was just thinking about all these different interpretations of power dynamics and how that affects equality and socioeconomic dynamics and gender. And I wanted to weave those ideas into the story. So as I mentioned, there's some exploration of domestic abuse. There's also men in influential positions over younger girls. There's some class exploration. But actually, one of the most fun aspects that I then went off within the story was I started thinking about power in terms of the dynamic between young girls and then later on as women. So these two characters who are best friends when they're 12 in the book have all this stuff going on that we probably remember from our own school days in terms of how girls learn really early on to manipulate and form cliques and isolate others and form hierarchies and just really navigate that power. And then often as women, sometimes that carries on. You kind of look at the school gates or the workplace and you can still see that happening sometimes. So that very much happens in the book and spirals out of control a little bit. But also is something that I think about quite a lot, because I think particularly with the Me Too movement, a lot of us have really tried to move away from the way that we often feel pitted against each other as women and are really discovering the power of sisterhood and how we can really be each other's biggest supporters. So that's in the book a little bit as well.
I read a really interesting thing this week. It was actually a caption somebody had put on Instagram that got shared around a lot, which was somebody, I think it was an influencer, saying that she had started to check herself every time she was somewhere where a girl who was being loud really annoyed her. So, you know, when there's a girl who's either taking selfies or like just being a bit obnoxious, and she kind of did what we all do, which is just like, oh, can that girl shut up? Oh, she's so annoying. And then she kind of looked at where that was coming from. And I think this is so true. I mean, I will hold my hands up and say I agree with this, that we hate is a girl who's super confident. Mm. And if you see a girl, if you're just kind of on your best behavior or whatever, you're just kind of living your normal life and you see a girl who has kind of, I suppose, more confidence than we would otherwise like or otherwise expect, then as women, our kind of first instinct is to be like, oh, they need to shut up and get back in their box, which is so awful. And I think that was such a kind of, oh, I found that really enlightening. I've never really thought about it from that perspective before, but it's so true. It's so our kind of problem with other girls more so than it is about those girls.
And I think often that's a reflection of our own desires or insecurities, yeah, how we feel about ourselves.
Of course, yeah, 100%. And Gemma, with the writing process, like, where do you begin? You said you started thinking about this around Brexit. I mean, that was quite a while ago. So how long does the whole process take?
So it's always really hard to tell because it's such a stop-start process. I generally, with the book, obviously a lot of it is just total fiction, but whenever there's something outside the realm of my experience, what I feel like I can really write authentically about, then I like to research. So with this, I spent a fair bit of time at the beginning doing research. So I was talking to child psychologists and social workers, and in the book, some of the characters live on an estate, which is something I don't have personal lived experience of. So I spoke to people who did and just kind of gathered all these insights, which I love this part of the process. And that took a little while. And then there's the writing, but then there's so much waiting because you send it. I always give it to a few friends to read, get their input. Then I send it to my agent. Often we do edits. Then it goes to the publishers. Then there's their edits. So it's kind of this real back and forth. So it's definitely been a period of a few years, but working on lots of other stuff intermittently too.
And does it get any quicker? Obviously, this is your third book. Does it get any quicker? You know, as it goes on, and presumably number one is the most like rah to get written.
Yeah, number one is definitely because you kind of spend your whole life, I think, gathering all these experiences that you're going to put down in your novel, and you put them all in, and then they're all in that first novel. So then, yeah, you kind of have to start
all your experiences again. Yeah.
But actually, my first published novel was my third novel that I'd actually written. The other two kind of, you know, tucked away in a drawer, gathering dust. But definitely, I'm much more confident, I would say, in the process now. I know, mm-hmm, I can write something and I can get to the end of the book, and mm-hmm, I kind of know where I'm going, and my strategy of how I plan and plot things is definitely a lot more developed as I've gone on.
Heather, Becky, do you feel like you've got a book in you? They always say that everybody's got one. Is that something you'd ever like to do?
It's something I fantasize about, but I probably wouldn't. I don't know. I don't feel I've got the confidence for it, but I don't know if I've got like an idea tucked away. Yeah, I think it's something most writers would like to try, mm-hmm, I think.
Becky?
I'd absolutely love to write a book, but I feel like, I mean, I say that, Gemma, I have no idea of the process, but I feel like I would really, I'd find it so cathartic, but then I worry I haven't got the attention span for it. I'm the kind of person, I'm so bad at starting things and never finishing things properly, or starting and going back to it about a year later, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I'd have to be very strict with myself, but it's certainly something I've thought about, you know, more than once.
Yeah, I think I think about it quite a lot. Yeah. I'm sort of just like waiting for an idea to come to me.
And do you know what? When Girl on the Train came out, I was like, why the hell didn't I think of that? On the
yeah, you watch a lot of dark, twisted things. I feel like there's got to have been an idea in there somewhere.
There's got to be somewhere, Charlotte. Come on.
You should give it a go.
Do you recommend just starting? Like, can you just like go and write a chapter and kind of break that first wall down? Or not really?
The first book that I wrote, which has not been published, but that one, I literally had an idea, kind of knew where it was going, and I just started and wrote the book. As I've gone on, I've learned to plan a lot more. Some writers don't, but I very much do now. Make a detailed plan, do all sorts of character development. I plot out exactly what's going to happen in each chapter because I like to know where I'm going. Often you then go off at tangents that you weren't expecting, and those are very frequently the most interesting parts. They're the bits you love in the end. But I definitely like to have a roadmap. Yeah. But you know what? I was always jealous growing up of the people who kept journals and diaries and, you know, have these records of their whole lives. And every new year I would start a new diary and it would last maybe a month and I would never carry on. So yeah, I think you just start, but then you have to keep going.
It's good to know that you can also be a quitter / procrastinator and still get a novel done. That's encouraging. Yeah. Becky, I didn't ask you, is there anything you're reading at the moment? Any novel recommendations?
Well, I was on a podcast last week and I spoke about Behind Her Eyes Sarah Finsborough, which, oh my God, guys, I'm so close to the end and it is amazing. But straight after, I've got my other one lined up, which is The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley.
Oh, yes.
Harry got this for me for my birthday and it's actually, I mean, sounds right up my street, a ripping, riveting murder mystery. Wiley is Agatha Christie. So I'm very excited to start that. I'm really looking forward to it.
That front cover Becky's holding up on Zoom for listeners, and that front cover looks really familiar. I definitely see that everywhere.
It was everywhere last year, I think, kind of on billboards and stuff.
Have you read it, Heather?
No, I haven't.
Well, I will let you know.
I'm also really waiting. I can't believe that no one on the podcast yet over the last like 2 months has talked about Where the Crawdads Sing.
I've got it.
I've got it too. I'm just trying to read it quickly enough so that I can be the first person to talk about it on the podcast. I'm really surprised that nobody has yet. All right, well, if you are looking for more recommendations for books to read over the next month and new releases, then have a look at Heather's feature on the site.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're going to talk about being creative now. I think lockdown has brought out the creative side of a lot of people that we don't often get to exercise. So we wrote a feature on the 10 creative activities for non-creative people. So these are things to try, like paint by numbers and marbling. And then a whole load of other stuff that I hadn't heard of, which is about you guys, like needle felting and diamond painting. So I want to know, do you guys do anything that's like, in inverted commas, you know, traditionally creative? Gemma, you've got little girls, right? So you must do some of this kind of stuff.
We do loads of arts and crafts. We've been actually, during lockdown, we've been doing a lot of glass drawing. So you get these kind of chalk pens that you can draw on glass, and they've just been covering our windows all around the house with drawing. We do lots of baking. They're really artistic, so they do a lot of that.
Becky, I'll come to you. In terms of creative outlets. Do you have any? Would you like to have any?
Do you know what? I don't have much creative outlets, which is a bit miserable, but I do like photography, in all honesty. I have got my SLR, which I've had since I was 18, and I've been thinking over lockdown, I really should have made the most of that, or just done a bit more with it. Needless to say, I haven't. But in terms of creativity, that's probably where my interests lie.
What do you take photos of?
Well, more like sort of when you're out and about. I mean, we're so lucky where I live down, sort of Brighton Way, as you know, but we have the South Downs and sort of landscapes. And I went up Devil's Dyke the other evening and had some beautiful photographs of the sunset. I'm very at one with nature.
So you are, you like a walk.
I am. I guess that side of things. But creativity-wise, a bit of photography. And I think, yeah, people and probably landscapes. But I'm by no means, you know, very amateur, but I do just quite enjoy.
Heather, what about you?
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe the same as Becky. I mean, no offence to this list, but, you know, none of it appeals, basically. I don't know. I just can't imagine just sitting down at, you know, of an evening and just doing some crocheting or making bracelets or painting by numbers. I mean, that's all stuff I'd love to do with my nephew, don't get me wrong. But I think, yeah, when it comes to me, I just think I don't get that bored very easily, so which is a good thing. So I guess I just don't feel like I need to be like, oh, right, I need to do something because I've got nothing else to do, so I'll take up a hobby kind of thing, I suppose.
Did you do creative things when you were younger? Like, I found this list actually hugely nostalgic. There was so much stuff there that I remember doing through the summer holidays and, you know, or school or whatever, that actually I don't think I've, yes, I don't mourn now, but actually I think, oh yes, that was nice, or that, you know, that was a good outlet.
I don't know, I think I honestly just always had my nose in a book, to be honest. I was always getting told off for like not being sociable and reading, so yeah. I'm pretty much like that now as well, but I've got a couple of cameras as well, like Becky, and I haven't really done anything in lockdown, but yeah, occasionally, like, trying to get to grips with a new camera and taking photos and things. But otherwise, I guess at the moment I'm just channeling my creativity by painting around the flat, so that can be my
physical
lockdown creative. Yeah, exactly, rather than like pictures. I just think I'm not very good at other art related stuff. That's probably why I just don't have much of an interest in it, I suppose.
Becky or Gemma, was there anything on this list that did appeal? Was there anything that you looked at and you're like, you know what, I'd love to give decoupage a go?
I hate decoupage.
I mean, what silly hobby. Sorry, let's put it out there. The thing is, with a lot of these things, it's kind of what you do with that finished product, right? Like, what exactly, I'm not entirely sure what you do with the decoupage bunny once it's made, personally.
Yeah.
Becky, anything?
Tie dye is something I've never given a go, and it's very on trend, so maybe I'll be whipping out my tie dye kit at the weekend.
Tie dye is on this list, and actually that has been like the number one creative activity of lockdown, hasn't it? I mean, I think that's got more to do with fashion trends than it does to do with crafting, perhaps.
You're trying to get the look for less rather than...
Yeah, exactly,
To be honest, like, I've never heard of marbling.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, did you not do it at school?
No.
You like, put a piece of paper in the thing and you swilled it around. It was really satisfying.
Yeah. I did actually love doing that at school. But yeah, I can't imagine doing it at home, make a right mess from
No. Gemma, are you naturally creative? You said your girls are, but do you also feel nostalgic about doing all of that kind of stuff?
Well, for me, I think writing has always been my form of expression. So right from a child, that was always what I did if I wanted to be creative. But I love joining in with them, but they're already way better at it than I am. So my daughter was teaching me all about kind of facial proportions and things. I don't remember learning that at school. But
I do. I remember having like a grid and you had to... Sure. Okay.
So you were paying attention. I obviously wasn't. But no, I think they probably get that from my husband's side of the family.
Fair enough. All right. Well, if you are interested in trying your hand at some crafty activities, perhaps in conclusion with some children, but then have a look at the feature on the site. Let's chat a bit about travel now. We wrote a really lovely feature where we interviewed 15 influential women on their dream travel inspiration right now. Everyone from Anina Bing to Monique Dale, Monica Vinader and Ruby Hammer took part and shared their dream holiday destinations, where's on their list, and their most memorable trips to date. So I would like to know what all of yours are. Heather, I'll come to you first. Your dream holiday destination.
So similarly to Anina Bing, I just really want to go back to Japan. And yeah, me and my boyfriend started a sort of savings fund at the beginning of the year because I was lucky enough to go on a press trip there last year.
I remember.
And I've always wanted to go. So I was lucky enough to, yeah, go last February. And it was everything I'd hoped it would be and more. And I absolutely loved it. So yeah, as soon as I came back, I was like, right, I need to go back ASAP. So yeah, still, I mean, it's probably a good few years away until I actually get to go, but I'm starting to save a little bit because obviously it's not that cheap to get there. But yeah, I'm desperate to go back. I love everything about it, like the people, the food. What I found when I was there is just obviously because it's and they're an island nation, you've just got everything, you know, the sea, you've got beaches, you've got amazing cities, you've got beautiful countryside, you've got mountains, you know, it's a very beautiful place. So yeah, I would love to go back.
When you went last time, where did you go?
We flew in and out of Tokyo, but the main trip was set in Setouchi, which is down in the southeast, and it's a cluster of thousands of different islands. And yeah, they're each really different, and it's got like this ginormous art scene there. So that was the main reason we went. They've got these sort of world-class museums on like this tiny island that you can only get to like once a day by these boats. And yeah, it's just a really special place, and I'm desperate to go back to that region. But also, there's so many places I obviously didn't get to go to, like Kyoto or anywhere like that. So I'd just love to go for like 3 weeks or something and just try and see as much of the place as possible.
Becky, where is your dream destination?
Do you know what? My dream destination is New Zealand, because a bit like Bobby Brown said on this list, it's somewhere that I have heard so much about. I mean, my brother went travelling all around, you know, sort of everywhere, but he says standout place was New Zealand, and he said you've just never seen anything like it, and it's just absolutely phenomenal, and every day you just can't believe that it's like a real place, because it's just so peaceful and, you know, it's just beautiful. And I also have another friend who went, and she said the same thing. And I think when you hear those kind of reviews, you just know that it would be so worth the sort of long trip. I mean, I don't think it's going to be happening anytime soon since New Zealand have sort of closed themselves up, but I mean, that would be a real trip of a lifetime for me. And another one, Harry and I went to Sorrento and the Amalfi Coast last year, and we only got to go to Positano for about 20 minutes, but I'm not joking, if I could go back to Positano for a week, I would in a heartbeat. I can't describe it. Pictures don't even do it justice. When you come in, it is beautiful. You've honestly never, it's like a postcard. It's just stunning, and it's tiny and small, but you can get everywhere within about half an hour to like Capri, and as I said, the Amalfi Coast. Or I just, Positano is very much 2021 list.
Yeah, everything that was on the 2020 list is now yeah, the 2021 list.
Exactly.
Gemma, what about you? Where's your dream destination right now?
It's so hard because I think so much of it is to do with where you are at what stage in your life. So New Zealand, I went to kind of on my gap year with my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband. And that was kind of, we were just looking for adventure, and it was amazing. And we were kind of raced around the world doing all sorts of things like that. We went to India, which was just so full of colour and just this whole other world, which I loved. But right now, we're way more into, let's find a great resort with brilliant swimming pools and a beach and kids' activities and all that stuff. So we went to California a few years ago, which is somewhere I always have a fondness for because I lived there for a little while as a child. And we usually base ourselves in LA, but this time we traveled around a little bit and we went to Santa Barbara, up into the mountains there, which was just gorgeous. Slight hiccup when a scorpion hijacked its way to our hotel in our Ooh. Bag. Yeah, that was interesting. But wow. After that, we then went slightly further north to a ranch called the Alisal, which was just the most idyllic, wholesome, all-American experience. Things like you could get up in the morning, you could just go have breakfast in the restaurant, or you could jump on a hayride and go up to the lake where there'd be a singing cowboy and a stack of American pancakes, and then you could take a little boat and go horse riding. And it was just so much fun. And for us at that time with the kids, it was just perfect.
Oh, I bet they loved it.
Yeah, that sounds so fun. Heather, you've done that trip as well, haven't you, all around California?
Yeah. I did that a couple of years ago when me and my friends all turned 30, when we were back at uni, kind of 18, like, right, when we're 30, we'll go to the States. And we did, which was cool. I love that. Santa Barbara especially. I absolutely love it around there. It's lovely.
Yeah, we stayed in Santa Barbara a few years ago. We stayed in Montecito, which is like a little town, like just next to Santa Barbara. But it's just so pretty and lovely, isn't it? And that drive, you'll drive from LA all up the Malibu coast. That's just amazing.
Amazing. Oh,
wow.
What about you, Charlotte? I'm sure you've got somewhere good up your sleeve.
Well, we had 3 weeks booked in Chile for this Christmas.
Of course.
Oh, God,
which we then cancelled because we were buying a house. We were like, well, that's quite a lot to do in 1 year. And then the house fell through. So it's been so, now I have no house and no holiday. But yes, more of South America. Last, I'm sure listeners will remember, we did a South American trip over 2 years ago. And in Brazil, we just did Rio and Iguazu. But there are all these incredible islands off the coast of Rio that I'm just desperate to go to, none of which I can remember the name of. But are these like really beautiful kind of secluded islands with like, you know, no electricity and kind of real rural living. And like Rio is the coolest, most vibrant, amazing city I've ever been to. So yeah, I definitely like to get back there and see more. We didn't get a chance. We did bits of Argentina as well, but we didn't get a chance to go down south. So I would love to do Patagonia and Ushuaia and yeah, all those bits of South America and also more of Africa. Again, I had an amazing time on honeymoon and Botswana, Zimbabwe and Mozambique, and you just get the safari bug, and there are so many cool types of, like, I'm really desperate to do a desert safari. You can do it in Namibia, and there are all these like lions who live in the desert instead. It's like a completely different landscape, completely different ecosystems and everything. But yeah, that's, so those are my my big wish list places to tick off, but God knows when that's going to happen. What about another memorable trip to date, Heather?
Okay. So apart from Japan, yeah, I've been to Iceland twice, and that is just a magical country. Both times I've been, I've gone in December when it's, you know, pretty much darkness for a lot of the time, but we did see the Northern Lights twice, which was amazing. Wow. And yeah, it's a beautiful country, really incredible people, awesome food. It's an amazing place. Again, I never really liked geography when I was at school, but similarly to Japan, I think I liked it because there's volcanoes and then crazy waves and then glaciers, and there's just all sorts of like amazing things all in one place that I just can't think of that many countries I've been to where you could see so many sort of natural phenomena in like 1 or 2 days. So yeah, definitely recommend going.
It's an interesting place to have gone to twice.
Yeah,
I think me and my friends, a certain group of friends, we love like Bjork and are obsessed with like Icelandic bands. And I don't know, I guess just since I've been young, I've just always had a fascination with Iceland because of Bjork and Sigur Rós and just this amazing music scene they've got in quite a tiny place. So yeah, I think I've just always been fascinated by there. So the first time we went in 2011, and yeah, just fell in love with the place, which is why we went back again. But it's really easy to get to now. It wasn't back then, but they do sort of daily flights there now from Luton, I think. So yeah, it's easy to get to, and yeah, honestly, it's amazing.
Just pretty expensive, right, once you're there?
Once you're there, yeah. I mean, we stayed in like a really horrid Airbnb the second time to keep costs down, but yeah, I'd love to go back and do it, you know, in a nice, a proper way. Yes. But no, it's great.
Becky, what about you?
So I have to sort of one, actually. We went to, I feel like mine are all Italy, very standard for someone to observe pasta, but we went to Lake Garda. It must have been, I was about 18, actually, so it's really, really long time ago now, but you know when something sticks in your memory so well, because we drove through Geneva, and it was just one of the most incredible experiences, because the landscape you see and the sort of, there's a lot of thunderstorms down there, a lot of big burly storms and then heat waves, and it's just, you see sort of everything, and it's a real experience swimming in a lake with sort of swans and ducks, but you're kind of by a beach. It is bizarre, but you feel really sort of calm, and I can't tell you how relaxing it is. And also Lake Garda is just tiny, and you can get to Verona from there really easily. There's just a lot to do, but as I said, if you can drive, I can't recommend it enough, because you see some beautiful scenery.
I think there will be a lot of people driving to Europe this summer. Again, as long as the borders stay open, then there will be a massive increase in that happening. So that's a good tip, actually. Thank you. Gemma, what about you? What's a memorable trip for you?
Well, it'll be very boring and say Italy as well. We did our honeymoon in Italy, and we flew and then took a boat into Venice, which I'd never been to before. So you're just kind of entering this fairy world with all these twinkling lights and the canals instead of the roads. And it was just so beautiful. And then we traveled around Italy. And so we did Rome and Milan and Capri and all over the place. And for a number of years, we just kept going back to Italy because, first of all, the food is just so good. Every bite you take of olive bread and pizza and that, it's just, I love it. And it's just so beautiful and friendly, and it's one of my favourite places. If I had to pick somewhere else, I also did a trip with a girlfriend quite a few years ago now to Mexico, and we travelled around there quite a lot as well. And it just seemed each place we went to, we were discovering, obviously these were not our discoveries, but we felt like we were discovering these hidden beaches and just turquoise waters that you could walk out for 300 meters before it went past your knee level. And just the stuff that you maybe don't get so much staying a bit nearer to home.
Did you do Mexico City? Because I forgot that is somewhere that's also really high on my wish list right now.
That time we didn't, no. We did Isla Mujeres and Tulum. And I'm forgetting a few places after that, but we stayed all kind of in that area.
In that case, you got to go to Tulum before it was horribly tourist.
Yeah,
it's rank.
It looks horrible.
Horrible. We went 2 years ago, and we stayed between Cancun and Tulum, so we were lucky. We kind of escaped the throngs, but we went into Tulum for dinner one night, and it's like Magaluf. It's horrible. Yeah, it's literally like Magaluf with expensive hotels. It's like all people on the streets with flashing lights. Real shame.
Yeah, it was nothing like that then. We literally stayed in a little cabin on the beach with a hammock, and it was nobody else there. Yeah.
I believe that Isla Holbox is like that now. That's where you go if you want to get that.
The Tulum.
We did an insider's guide for that. That's on the site that we did last summer. So any tips on where? Yeah. So if anyone needs any ideas for where to stay or go,
good tip, Heather.
Charlotte, how about you?
Probably when we did our road trip around the southern states of North America, that was also the most incredible trip. We did Nashville, Memphis, New Orleans, Austin, and it's amazing how many different cultures there are in the states. And even each one of those places has such a strong identity and culture, and, you know, whether it's food or history or music, you know, each one of those places, even though they're only a kind of 3-hour drive from one another, with Austin as an exception, that's quite a slap. But the other three, they like effervesce with their culture and are just really kind of fun, magical places. Probably Nashville the most, in Memphis and New Orleans for various reasons, both have quite kind of dark, dingy sides, but Nashville is just like purely happy, wonderful city of music and great food, and it is so memorable. Well, if you're looking for more travel inspiration, then do you have a look at the feature that we wrote with those 15 influential women. Let's finish now by talking about career lessons. We interviewed Marcella Sigulam. She is the head of global events at Total Management Group. I cannot recommend reading this interview enough. She has one glamorous job, but it got us thinking about career lessons and the advice that we would give, the best advice we've been given about your career. So what is your number one piece of career advice, Gemma? I will come to you first.
Well, I really liked from Marcella's list, her advice about remembering to stop and celebrate, because I think that's something that we often don't do. I remember for me, when I was listed for the Women's Prize, I was so happy, but I immediately started thinking about, great, how can we now pivot from this to the next thing? And I think we're often just sprinting forwards. So I really liked that. But I would add to that, that also try to enjoy the process, because often the part where you're striving and it's the hard graft and it's the process of getting there is actually the bit that's the most fun and the most rewarding. I always sounds slightly trite, but I often think back to philosophy days at university and Aristotle's concept of happiness, that it's all about the pursuit of happiness. It's about the active process of it. And often it's not getting to that place that we think we want to get to. It's finding the joy in the getting there. So obviously we all need to make money, and sometimes you don't enjoy every aspect of what you're doing. But if you can work into your career things that you love, I think that's the best way to be happy with everything you do.
I agree. I think that is very good advice. Becky, what about you?
Gosh, I mean, there's been so much over the years, and I think my advice is very much particular to our media industry. But I think one of the best things I ever sort of got was from my old boss, and it was very much to be conscientious, but to also always use your common sense, because I think a lot of the time that just goes out the window with so many things. And actually we work in such a fast-paced environment that you don't always have to be the most brilliant in the room, but if you use your common sense, it goes an incredibly long way in the day-to-day of things.
A lot of people don't have much common sense, so if you have some, then you should use it. Yeah,
whip it out. But I think, you know, it's silly things, like it does make you quite memorable as well in a job, because I think a lot of the time things go so quick, you do just want people to crack on with things and take initiative. And I think another piece that really resonated with me in this list is deep down you know what's right for you and what isn't. And actually it's something really similar my dad said to me once, which was, when you make a decision, it's always the right decision for that moment in time, and you can never dwell on that, you can never think too long about it, because that is what was right for you in that moment. And I just think really that is the best advice, because I think I am such a sort of second guesser, but I think the best career advice is to go with what you know in the moment and to make what you can of it. And if it doesn't feel right, then it's 90% sure it's because it isn't. So I loved that bit of advice.
It's very true. Heather?
Yeah, my dad's piece of advice has always been, from, this is even when I was like 16, like, don't leave a job you hate until you've got another one definitely lined up.
Very pragmatic advice there, yeah.
I know, yeah. It's like, it doesn't matter if you hate it, you can't leave. But yeah, good piece of advice. But yeah, I suppose from what I've learned is just, if you can do something face to face or meet somebody properly in order to, in my case, interview somebody, it's always 100% better. You're always going to get a much better result if you take the time and effort to actually kind of meet as many people as possible. I just think if you do meet people face to face or even just phone somebody, you're always going to get a much better connection and end up with a much better, regardless of whether it's writing or anything, you're always going to end up with a much better result rather than just relying on sort of online writing here and there, or like messaging someone on Instagram, or like sending some questions over via email. I think if you can do something
one-on-one, my life sending questions over via email.
It's just, yeah, I just think the end result of whatever project it might be is always going to be so much better and rewarding.
Yeah, so true. Finally, Gemma, is there any advice that you've been given that always stays with you, as that is like your number one, always go back to, always remember?
There really is, actually, which is, I think it was just after I left university, I did some work experience at Vogue. And at the end of the 3 weeks work experience, you got to have kind of a meeting with Alexandra Schulman. And so we did that. And in that meeting, she said, if you're a writer, you write. And that just really always stayed with me, because I think sometimes, particularly in creative industries, you're maybe waiting for permission to do that thing that you're wanting to do. You're waiting for someone to commission you for something and say, okay, now you can do it. Whereas actually, if that's what you want to do, you just have to keep doing it and you make your own opportunities. And in other professions too, so I know so many actors, for example, who are now actors turned writers because they weren't getting the parts that they wanted, so they wrote their own parts, and or writers turned producers. Or even if there's something slightly outside your realm of experience, you can create that opportunity. So I think it's that. It's not waiting for somebody to tell you you're allowed to do something. It's just do it.
And also not putting yourself in a box, right?
Yeah.
Good. I love that. Thank you so much. I think we'll leave it there. Gemma, thank you so much for joining us today. It was so lovely to have you.
Thank you. Gemma's
book,
such fun.
Gemma's book, To Dare, is out now, available everywhere, presumably. Amazon, Waterstones, the rest.
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any feedback at all, please do email podcast@sheerlux.com. We love hearing from you. Don't forget also to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.